This is the Bat Pod.
Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod, Episode 9. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me, as always, Joey Galvez.
Hey, how's it going tonight, Bill?
Good, it's going real good. Tonight, we have a good show for you. We have Batman number 63, Detective Comics 997, and The Batman Who Laughs number 2. A little bit of Stump the Co-host, topic of the week, and a real interesting character spotlight.
That character spotlight is a mystery for me, man. You didn't tell me who you're doing the character spotlight on, so I'm kind of excited.
I might have told you.
Ooh.
I might have.
I think I might remember, but it sounds like it's going to be good.
We'll see. Okay, let's get to our first book.
The Bat Pod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
We now bring you to the Batcave, where Batwoman is learning some disturbing news. Batwoman, I'm glad you arrived.
You know me, Batman. I love spending my nights in a drafty cave.
Something isn't right, Batwoman. I just saw on Twitter that Bob, from A Gal Walks in a Comic Shop, is going to be on the Batpod 2 episodes in a row.
That's strange. The Batpod is usually a great place to go for intelligent discussion, and they have great hosts. Why would they want Bob? Shouldn't they have had Barbara on instead?
Starting to think there might be an evil genius behind this. No one in their right mind would have Bob on twice. Somebody, or something, is trying to destroy the show. Will Batman be able to uncover the mystery of who is trying to destroy the Batpod? Tune in for future updates on the Batpod!
Our first book tonight is Batman number 63. Your writer is Tom King. Your artist is Mikael Janin. Your colorist is Jordi Belair. Your letterer, Clayton Cowles. Your cover, Mikael Janin. Your variant cover, Tony S. Daniel and Tamu Mori. Your associate editor, Brittany Holzer. Your editor, Jamie S. Rich. And as always, Batman was created by Bob Kane and Bill Finger. So in this issue, another nightmare. Only this time, Bruce relives the wedding, only Selina shows up, but at the end of the issue ends up dying, just like John Constantine predicted, who makes a special appearance, and things start to get a little clearer as to what is going on.
Emphasis on little.
We have another nightmare. We had an idea that something was going on last issue. You know, issue 61, where we had the Master Bruce story, we weren't entirely sure what that was exactly. We thought it was the Master Bruce character coming back, but then a lot of things didn't really make sense, that they were sending him to Arkham, and so we were a little confused. And then last issue definitely was a dream slash nightmare. So we get the same thing here, another nightmare. But John Constantine is your, you know, he's leading the story here. You get some panels that you figure out that this is a nightmare, but, you know, I don't know how John Constantine comes into play here. I mean, what did you think of his insertion into the story?
I thought it was a little weird at first, the dialogue in the beginning before you even see that it's him. I mean, obviously we knew he was showing up here because of the cover. You know, that couple of pages there when you see, you know, Selina and Bruce on their honeymoon, I guess, and there's so many words there. You kind of get this feeling that obviously there's somebody telling a story, but you didn't know that it was John Constantine. So I thought that was a little odd, a little weird, but that's the way we're going to get him into this book. And I mean, anytime that he's involved, there's something supernatural going on, right? I want to know how he's going to come into this, why he's here, what kind of supernatural element is involved in these nightmares.
Well, I don't think there's a supernatural element. My personal opinion, I think this is Bruce's subconscious talking to himself.
Uh-huh. Right. But that's the thing. If this is, and obviously they do say that in the book, that this is Bruce's subconscious, and this is, but that's a little weird for him to be putting John in there, you know? He deals with the supernatural elements. So why would it be him in there and not somebody else?
I don't know. They don't have a big history together. So I don't know.
That's the odd thing about it.
But this story was kind of interesting because, you know, he tells them right off the bat that you see that Selena shows up for their wedding on the rooftop. Uh-huh. And John keeps saying, you're in another dream, you know, and they're talking back and forth, but nobody else hears them talking back and forth.
Yeah, I did. I don't know if you got this feel. Did you get this feel that, like, you know how when you watch like a TV show and they kind of have one of those recap episodes where they like tell you everything that happened in the last handful of episodes just to kind of catch you up a little bit. I had that feeling that this is one of those books here.
Okay. I didn't know where this was going. And you know how this sorta relates to real life. I'll tell you. You know when you get that eerie feeling, you know, maybe your wife or whoever, one of your kids doesn't call you or doesn't check in when they're supposed to check in. And, you know, your subconscious goes into this mode that it sends these thoughts in your head. Well, maybe they were in a car accident. Maybe something happened. Okay. Maybe this, maybe that. I sort of think that's going on here because he's telling Bruce ahead of time, yeah, she's going to die. No matter what happens, she's going to die.
That's an interesting take.
So it's like his subconscious is telling him this wedding should never happen because of this reason. She was always meant to die. It doesn't matter. In this particular issue, she dies by a sniper, and he thinks it might be the KG Beast.
Right. You know, my questions from the last handful of books, because we were talking about, well, where the heck is this coming from with the whole Master Bruce thing? And we're like, where are these books? You know, the Professor Pig book, you know, it's a dream, and his son, it turns into a son. It's so weird. It was so odd to me, an off feeling we were talking about. This one now, obviously, is kind of bringing it all kind of together, and, you know, it's all dreams. It's all his subconscious, and they kind of let us know that here. I like that we got those answers. But I don't know. I still have some unanswered questions.
Right. I mean, John Constantine, in the one scene, he sort of says to Bruce, he says, mind if I ask you a question? Did the jail let Master Bruce kill those children? Yeah. They couldn't have done anything to stop
it? Right.
And that was a question that, you know, you thought, yeah, kind of weird that he killed all these people in prison. Yeah. And for that matter, in the meat locker, how did it take you so long to figure out Pig was your boy? Right. Aren't you the world's greatest detective?
Yeah.
So it's like, can't you figure out that this is another nightmare? Right.
This is not a nightmare to him. He doesn't want it to be a nightmare. He wants this to be his reality. So I can understand why this nightmare here with the wedding and the honeymoon and all that stuff and the happiness, that's what he wants deep down inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The one thing I want to bring up is, you know, at one point, he's saying his name and she's saying her name, and she took the name Wayne, which I thought initially it was Batman and Catwoman getting married, not Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle.
Right.
Because it was mentioned that they couldn't get married in the public eye because
she was wanted.
She's like a criminal. Yeah. Right. She's wanted and she has a history.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
If she has the name Wayne, people are going to figure it out eventually, right? You know, but I mean, it's part of the nightmare. Maybe that's one thing that he was hoping, that she took his name.
Right. And it's kind of cool that they're kind of like going back and forth and like a team. You know what I mean? That was kind of a cool aspect that he's like, oh, I'm here at the stadium. She's got the other venue and we're kind of killing two birds with one stone kind of a thing. This is what we do. I love that. That was kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. And it, you know, can you foresee Bruce being married to her where she's not a criminal anymore? She was always like an anti-hero. Yeah. Not always, but in the New 52 and such, she was more or less an anti-hero. Uh-huh. Could you see her totally becoming a hero?
No, No, you see elements of her, you know, of that here, you know, because there's a moment where they are kind of, oh, you go do your thing. You go do your heroic thing. I'm going to go do my thing. And you kind of, it's kind of insinuated that she's going to go do Catwoman stuff. So I thought that was kind of cool that she wants to be with Batman. She wants to go help him and I guess save
but
people.
I think he would have a problem with
that. Right.
I don't know how long that would let. I think that would come to head at some point.
Yeah, I think that would be a really cool book to see, you know, the conflict there. See her kind of doing it for a little while, doing the hero thing, and then she eventually kind of fight with herself.
Revert back.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
So the big reveal, if you call it a reveal here, John Constantine is trying to explain to Batman here, and I'll read the dialogue and that'll set everything up. They got you strapped to some machine using Scarecrow's gas to induce this, all of this. Whatever came before, whatever comes next, they're trying to drive you bleeding mad.
Yeah.
So, the aftermath of Flashpoint Batman, whatever battle they had, Batman is now strapped to some kind of machine. Yeah. By Flashpoint Batman or whoever is in this. We haven't seen that part of the story yet. And I hope we get to see that, you know? Know what I'm saying? When it comes to the end of this. And I don't know if anybody out there knows what our next couple issues are going to be. We're stepping away from this nightmare and we're doing a crossover that's related to Heroes in Crisis.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
It's actually a crossover with the Flash.
Flash and so, coming out of Heroes in Crisis.
It's a two-issue break. And then we come back to these nightmares in issue number 56. And you got 56, 57, 58 or nightmare issues. And then 59, we get back to our story.
Okay. That's kind of a long time, huh?
It seems like a long time to me. I mean, these stories have been okay to me, but I really want to know what happened here. How he got to this point, how he gets out of this. Is this really driving him mad? What is this doing to his psyche, you know?
I really want some kind of resolve.
It's a very slow burn.
Yeah, you can call it that.
I have to say this was an entertaining issue. The art was pretty fabulous.
Yeah, the artwork was amazing. I'm looking at a page here where you see Bruce Wayne punching out John Constantine. That is a cool panel.
Yeah, that is. I guess my favorite scene in this entire book, when they're discussing about going down in the Batcave and you have the clock there. And Selina's like, I think we should get a remote.
Yeah.
And he says, you just turn it to 1048 or maybe a fingerprint scanner. Said if you just move the hands to 1048. Yeah. Or like a face identifier thing that's on our phones. 1048 is when my parents died.
And then she says, if we can't fix the clock, can we do something about the pole or something like that?
And she said, using that code for your secret clock, that's not so healthy. And his comeback is, we dress up as animals and fight crime on rooftops.
Yeah. So you think he's got the poles that they slide down?
Yes, that's awesome. Wouldn't you want poles? No. Wouldn't you want poles? Seriously.
Maybe a 10-year-old Joey back in the day.
But the cover is decent.
Yeah, I really love that Tony S. Daniel cover there.
Oh, with Killer Croc. Yeah, that's pretty cool. The original cover is decent.
Yeah, that
it looks
cool.
Like, you know, John Constantine is doing something to Batman there. I mean, you can't get an idea really what this issue is about just from the cover. But did you have anything else you wanted to add about this issue?
No, I think that's about it. You know, I do want to say something there with that. We got that little tease there with that little crossover.
Yeah.
Who do you think that is and that with that shadow hovering above Batman and the Flash?
I don't know.
I thought that was interesting.
Well, in my opinion, it seems like they're going to be trying to solve the murders from Heroes in Crisis.
Yeah.
But I don't know what will really happen in this crossover because I think that's probably going to happen in the main book.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. It's hard to say. It'll be interesting. Yeah. As of right now, I don't know how we'll cover. We might cover these issues in like twos, meaning we'll cover Batman and the Flash together in an episode, okay, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because we probably want to do the whole story, but maybe we'll do Flash and Batman together as our Batman book, mm-hmm, and then go from there. So, okay. We will head to topic of the week.
One night in Gotham City Jail.
I can't believe I'm stuck in this jail cell on that kidnapping charge. Why did I ever allow the Eraser to rope me into this scheme? Me, the Catwoman. I deserve better than this.
Miss Kyle, you have a visitor?
About time my lawyer got here. Hey, you're not my lawyer. What are you doing here, Eraser?
Oh, Selina, you should be happy to see me. Did you know that Joey has declined to press charges?
How did you arrange that, Larry Fiasco?
Oh, it was easy. I paid a police officer to drop in a conversation the tidbit of, I would hate to admit to my wife that I was discovered by police, handcuffed by a woman in a leather cat suit and a whip. Joey, of course, started wondering how Elizabeth would respond. Enough of that kind of detail. Once again, the Eraser has removed all evidence of your crime. We do, however, have a bigger problem.
Perhaps you're referring to the fact that your plan failed? That the last episode caused your name to be trending on Twitter? I understand. There may have been at least two people who hashtagged your name. You were even mentioned by Chris on the Professor Frenzy show.
Oh, true. Chris and Jerry represented danger to my plans as well. What would happen if they covered Batman 188 on Bat Books for Beginners? I'll deal with that in time. No! Now I must focus my intellect on my greatest threat! The Bat Pod. To destroy a podcast! You must know why people love a podcast! Is it the soothing sound of Bill's delivery? Reminding us what it would sound like if a King of the Hill character was on too much lithium? Or is it because of the soft, supple nature of Joey's beard? Why must this podcast be so popular?
Bill does sound dreamy.
The truth is that people listen because of their knowledge of the topics. How to undermine their credibility. Then it occurred to me, what if they had Bob on their podcast more often?
They wouldn't. Why would they want him on? Tips on how to drink too much? A desire to have bad audio that drops out throughout the podcast? An attempt to get three or four homeless people who listen to a gal walks into a comic shop as their new audience members? Their podcast is too good for that.
Oh, you see, I planned for that as well. There is a member of the Batpod family. Oh, a very important member of the Batpod who's secretly working for me. When I give the command, they will strike.
But who? Who is the mole inside the Batpod?
Who indeed, Catwoman? Who indeed? Stay tuned for future episodes of The Bat Pod.
Welcome to Topic of the Week. And we bring in Bob from Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop. How you doing, Bob?
Bill, Joey, you brought me back again. What sort of bad decision-making tree were you using to do that decision?
Right.
Well, I think nobody else would come, so we knew you would.
Well, I'm always happy to be here, folks. You know that. Got the love for the Bat Pod, got the love for you guys, and well, also got the love for the beer, and I've been trapped in here for 2 days with a snowstorm.
Oh, man. That's fun.
Yeah. Now, Bill, Joey, just explain what a snowstorm is. It's when water in the air freezes. It comes down in these little pieces of frozen water we call snow. It's awful.
I wouldn't know. I'm sitting over here in 75 degree weather.
Oh, I hate you, Joey.
I know all about it. I'm here in the Baltimore, D.C. area.
We guys get a dusting.
Yeah, we got a dusting, basically. Up there in Buffalo, probably got a lot more.
Yeah, no. I used to live in D.C., Falls Church, Virginia. And okay. It was, I wanted to panic because there's been a dusting of snow. And I'd be sitting there going, you just drive. You just drive. It's nothing. But yeah, so we're a little bit chillier up here.
Yeah, over here we get something we call haboobs.
Okay.
And you guys have no idea what that is.
Tell me more.
Well, what it is a dust storm that is a mile or two high into the sky, and it is like miles and miles and miles wide of a dust storm, and it's like, it's almost like a blizzard. You can't see much in front of you. Sometimes you have to pull off to the side, turn your lights off so that you don't get hit. It gets a little crazy out here sometimes.
Well, anyway, let's get started with our topic this week. And the topic this week is the top three Batman allies. And Bob, you're the guest again, so you will go first.
All right, so I'm going to start off with, and you might be expecting a wild card after last week, but no, I'm going to be sticking pretty close to the vest here. I really think Lucius Fox. I grew up in the Batman living in a penthouse, the swinging Batman bachelor era, and the main person that he had contact with wasn't Alfred, was really Lucius Fox, the person who was in charge of Wayne Industries, the person who could be the exposition man for whatever the great adventure is. You know, it'd be Lucius Fox goes, "Well, Bruce, don't you remember that XCOM does this thing that you need to investigate?" And Batman would go out and take care of it. And he is a great character. He's the kind of character that, first of all, to see in 1979, to have an African-American business leader. Well, that's pretty rare in any medium, let alone comic books. You had maybe the Jeffersons, and that's about, you know, the best which you had. But Lucius Fox was an incredibly competent character. And yeah, he's mostly there for exposition, but he has been portrayed by such great characters. And of course, obviously, Morgan Freeman in the Christopher Nolan movies really fleshed out who Lucius Fox is. And
yeah,
Lucius Fox is one of the characters where you always wonder, you know, if he's controlled by Poison Ivy, is this really the end for Lucius Fox? If something blows up, you could believe them killing off Lucius Fox. And he's not like Alfred. Alfred seems he is always going to be there. But if something bad happens to Lucius, you're concerned. He is a great ally of Batman.
And a lot of bad things have happened to Lucius Fox over the years.
Oh, my God. He's been in a coma how many times? like he has a frequent flyer miles for the number of times he's been in a coma, in a hospital, or children kidnapped.
He's been kidnapped, you know, the first arc of Batman and the Outsiders. He was taken to Markovia.
Yeah, we hope Wayne Industries has one hell of an insurance policy, because Lucius Fox, he needs it.
You would think so.
Right.
Very good. And, you know, that's not a character that I thought of, but it's kind of interesting. He's been there, like, how long he's been around? He's been
since
there.
Since 79.
Yeah. He's been there in Bruce's life, you know. He's always there. Sometimes not every writer uses him, but then you'll get a writer that uses him really well in a story. It's usually Lucius in trouble, you know, as we said.
He is kind of the Lois Lane figure, like, "Oh, help me, Batman. I'm tied up."
Yeah.
In a very sexy pose. But you know what it is? Because Bruce Wayne is a lot harder to write for people than Batman is. Batman, anyone has a, "I'm Batman," or a growl. But to write a good Bruce Wayne story is a lot harder. And for that, anyone who uses Lucius Fox in an effective fashion, my hat's off to him, because Lucius is a great character because he shows Bruce Wayne that we don't normally see.
So, Joey, what's your number three?
Well, my number three kind of teetered back and forth, and I was going to go. Okay, so the way I chose my three is I had to sit there and think about who is Batman, what makes Batman. And I went back back and forth from Gordon and Lucius Fox, and kind of it was like, okay, these guys are the ones that are key elements here. You know, I always say that Batman is not just Bruce Wayne. Batman is Alfred. Batman is Bruce Wayne. And I would definitely say that for Gordon and Lucius Fox as well, right? They all are a team, and they are Batman. They are what Batman is. I think I'm going to go with Lucius Fox for a lot of the same reasons you did too. And, I think because I like what they did in the movies, but I like even more what they did in the TV show Gotham. And here we go. Here comes all the hate mail, right? Because nobody loves that show. I'm probably the only one. But I love Lucius Fox in there. He's awesome. He is a younger Lucius Fox, and he is almost like a different version of the, you know, the trilogy, Morgan Freeman Lucius Fox. I love what they're doing there, and it's just his character just keeps getting even better in the show.
Interesting. I didn't even know he was in Gotham.
Yeah, it's awesome. He's a great, if you don't watch that show for anything else, watch it for how amazing that this guy does his character. His name, the guy who portrays him, is Chris Chalk. He's an awesome actor.
Yeah. From what I've seen, he does play it very well. It's a very Elseworlds type setting, the TV series, but yeah, he does a good job.
All right, so obviously we're gonna pick Lucius Fox, unless Bill is so stupid for number three. Bill, what is your number
three? Outside the box a little bit. You know, Batman has a bunch of allies in Gotham City. He also has a few outside of Gotham City. And I picked Superman as my number three ally.
Yeah, okay.
And what's better than Batman and Superman? Dawn of Justice. Seriously. No.
Oh, Martha. Your name is Martha, too. Oh, I can't hurt you. I want to kill you, but not if we have the same mother's name. Oh, my God. Oh, my mother also liked chocolate milk. Oh, Superman, now I'm your friend. They both like chocolate milk. Martha.
Anyway, you know, Super and Batman always had that relationship like friends. I don't know if they're best friends, but you know, he had an issue, last year of, you know, the double date issue when Batman and Superman went to the carnival, you know, and they were dressed up like each other, you know?
Oh, man.
that was actually one of my favorite comics of last year, I think, when it comes right down to it. There was something great about when they're friends. I mean, a lot of people grew up with mm-hmm. them being friends. They were friends up until Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns comes out. Obviously, Superman and Batman are friends. There's been really dumb issues where they've cried together. Issues where they had surrogate sons together. The Batman-Superman sons were really all, you know, Superman's computer in the Fortress of Solitude. What if they had kids? They have had this great connection, and we've missed that ever since someone said, oh man, it's really cool when like Batman in armored suit is like, punching Superman. And ever since then, they have had to be enemies, and it's nice to see them friends. And that double date episode captured the best of all of them.
I'd like to say that they are frenemies.
See, I don't think they have to be. I think they're both people who are the best at what they do. And I think they have incredible respect. They've always had respect for each other. And the idea of them being enemies, as I said, all dates back to one great visual image of Batman with his foot on Superman's face. We love it, right? Because Batman's the underdog. Oh, my God, he's beating Superman, or the worst time ever. But now we have a whole generation that's been raised with, yeah, Batman, he's going to kill Superman. Fine, but that misses why that was so impactful when we first saw it in Dark Knight Returns. They're so good as friends. I'm not a big fan of them being enemies.
In pre-52, you wouldn't have thought that. I mean, you did have the Dark Knight Returns, but there are a lot of great stories where they are good friends. I mean, they had how many series of Batman, Superman? How many issues in that series?
But they're the first two heroes that really teamed up on a regular basis. And you can make an argument for the JSA being the first team-ups, but Batman, Superman, they realized two of them on a cover can sell a comic, and maybe they didn't appear in the same issue, but when they did, it was great. And the first time they're, you know, they're on a cruise and they're both, you know, changing their outfits because they're stuck in the same cabin together, and then they go and fight crime together. I don't know. It's just been a great friendship all the way through, even though they're such different characters, and it worked. And I think them as frenemies does not work.
No, and I don't enjoy that as much. That doesn't, like Batman versus Superman, the movie, for instance, it something didn't feel right, like the majority of that movie. But then when they get together at the end, I got a happy feeling, you know? I got that feeling that, okay, this is how they were meant to be, even if you didn't like the Superman or Batman character who were playing the characters. You got the feeling that those two characters are meant to be together, fight together.
Yeah, the only part that works in that movie is the moment Wonder Woman appears and you see all three of them ready to fight a bad guy. There's something, no matter who you are, going, hell yeah. And the rest of the movie does not lead up to that moment. It doesn't add up to why that happens. But we forgive the movie a little bit because that moment is so awesome. But there was so much missing where they could have done it. And I thought Ben Affleck could have been a great Batman. Henry Cavill, I think he's a perfectly adequate Superman. I just wish that Batman wasn't a serial killer with his kill car. And I wish that Superman wasn't a, I don't know, I don't want to be here, I'm going to snap someone's neck. I want a better Superman. I want a better Batman. I want better. Yeah. Make it better. Stop making things bad.
Okay, Bob, what's your number two?
So my number two, I'm going to go back to the first appearance of Batman ever, right? You know, we're Famous Detective Comics number 27. And who are the first two people you see? James Gordon and Bruce Wayne. Ever since the beginning, Jim Gordon is absolutely an essential part of Batman's history. He is the person who was there from the very beginning. He is the one who helps set the action going. He is the one who says to Bruce Wayne or Batman, hey, here's what's going on. Oh, the Joker is doing something. And you have a story because of it. But the same thing, you always love James Gordon, no matter how he appears, from, you know, the kind of patrician guy in his, in a seat in the first appearance to the James Gordon that appears, you know, the Commissioner Gordon in Batman 66. Anytime you have Jim Gordon, you're going to have a great story. And of course, obviously, Batman Year One solidified that it's not always a story about Batman. It's also a story about Gotham. And Gotham is reflected by James Gordon. He is such a great character. And on a personal note, the second Batman comic I ever bought was Brave and Bold. And there's a picture of Batman and Hawkman, and they're protecting Commissioner Gordon. And the story is basically there's this alien bounty hunter who wants to kill Commissioner Gordon. And it turns out that Commissioner Gordon, when he was a kid, when he was a young cop, shot an alien by mistake. And now intergalactic law is hunting for James Gordon. Dumb story, although great artwork. But I loved it as a kid. I cared about James Gordon as a person. He's the first time when a side character became real. I didn't have Perry White's backstory. I didn't have other people's backstory. I had Commissioner Gordon's backstory. He was a young rookie cop in the 30s, and he shoots an alien by mistake and feels bad about it ever since. Loved it. And so I've always been in love with that character. And anytime you have Commissioner Gordon, I am completely down for that. He is such a great character. Nolanverse did a great job with him. I just wish there was more Commissioner Gordon. Although I'm sure, Joey, now at this point coming, well, in Gotham, turns out he's a great character. I'm sure he is. I'm sure Gotham is a great TV show. All right, Joey, stop guilting me.
So you know
this.
What, guys? They do a really good Gordon in Gotham.
Oh, but where's the stash, man? Where's the stash? Seriously.
Joey gets an additional $10 sent to him from Fox Television every time he mentions the TV show Gotham.
There's an episode on tonight, guys. No, just kidding.
Ka-ching! Joey just rubbing that $10 bill in his beard, going, oh, yeah.
I'm not even sweet playing. My phone just said that there's an episode on tonight. So my number two. Like I said, I was going to go in between Lucius Fox and Jim Gordon. I'm glad you said that because I think he really needed to be talked about. But since you're talking about him, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk about, you know, another one that is, you know, a part of you who Batman is. And it is Dick Grayson, Robin, Nightwing. You know what I mean? He was there. He was a sidekick from the beginning. And then he, you know, went off and did his own thing. Nightwing was created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. I love their Teen Titans run. Awesome guys. I was fortunate enough to meet George Perez at one of the cons of a handful of years back. Awesome guy. Great artist. I love this stuff. And he's an awesome character. Even till this day, I love the stuff that's going on. Maybe not the Rick Grayson type stuff, but you know, he's an awesome character.
I mean, you're right, Joe. I mean, I, I love Nightwing too.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever loved him as Robin. Like, I was never a big Robin person. Like, oh my God, why is this kid here? Although, in retrospect, I go back going, yeah, you know, Batman really needed that to succeed. And I think Teen Titans, great. I think the idea of DC being a legacy comic book company, which they threw away with New 52, but there's a point when DC had this great thing of, there is a legacy in history, and Robin growing up or Wally West becoming the Flash made DC a much more interesting company than Marvel for a very long period of time. I agree.
Yeah, and Dick, we're talking about Robin versus Nightwing. Nightwing, at least now, feels like, you know, he fits Batman perfectly. Him as Robin, I'll be honest, I didn't read a lot of him as Robin, because, you know, he stopped being Robin. How long ago?
Yeah, 1969.
A long time.
Yeah, and then, I mean, my tradition of Robin was Robin as a backup character, and usually detective or Batman family, where it's, well, he's in college, but he's still going to be Robin. And that didn't quite work. But the minute he became Nightwing, and you're right, Joey, Marv Wolfman did an incredible job with taking Dick Grayson to the next level and making Dick Grayson a more interesting character and making the DC universe more interesting, because otherwise DC universe would have been locked into a certain time frame, the same way that Marvel Comics was locked into a time frame the minute, you know, Franklin Richards was
born. I agree. Nightwing, I think I'm right there with you, Bob. I think I like the Nightwing character more than I did Dick Grayson's Robin. But when he is Nightwing and he's out there doing stuff, you know, he's awesome. He's at his best, right? But he is one of those characters that I've always thought that they're always flipping him on his lid. You know, he was Batman for a while there. That's like I said, they're always flipping him on his lid.
Yeah, I think he's missing one step. I think there's a final form for Dick Grayson. There's obviously Robin, and Nightwing was the needed step to take him to the next level. Maybe there needs to be the third version of Dick Grayson, the adult form, if you will. And no, I think a lot of people tried it, but no one has actually managed it. But I think when that happens, when he takes on his third identity, I don't know what it's going to be, but at that point, he becomes one of the more fascinating characters in comics, from kid sidekick to his own person, to what it's like to be an adult growing up in a world where you've been mentored by a man who wears a bat costume around a mansion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of potential there, and I just hope that someday someone will really realize it.
That's interesting. That's an interesting take.
So, Joey, you have your favorite Dick Grayson run is the Nightwing years. Bill, what's yours when it comes to Dick Grayson?
You know,
any favorite time period?
Probably would be the New Teen Titans before he becomes Nightwing.
Okay. Wow.
That would probably be my favorite. I mean, there's some New 52 stuff that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the Nightwing book right off the bat. Yeah. And the New 52 where, you know, showing him and he was traveling with the circus, and that seemed kind of interesting to me. But then before too long, he, you know, went off with Spiral, and I didn't read too much of that. But, you know, there are a lot of good stories with Dick Grayson. There really are.
I always felt bad because Wally West had that moment where he became the Flash. And I know this is a little bit of fan wank because obviously for, you know, IP reasons alone, for reasons of billions of dollars in films, you're never going to see it. But the idea of Dick Grayson deciding how he deals with the mantle of the bat. What happens when Bruce Wayne is no longer front and center? Would love to see that story. People have touched their toes in the water. There's been Dick Grayson replacing Batman for short periods of time. And by the way, Grant Morrison's version was brilliant with Dick Grayson taking over. But no one has really done that final form of Dick Grayson. Where does he go? And I just want to see it. But obviously, no one is going to – DC, Warner Brothers, is not going to give up money on Bruce Wayne Batman. So yours got Batman, therefore Dick Grayson will always be in the shadow. I just want to see some way for him to get out of that shadow.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be interesting. So let's go to my number two. And my number two is a character that maybe at the beginning he wasn't as important that he is now, but now I cannot see Batman function without Alfred. Mm-hmm. So my number two is Alfred. We were just reading a story, and I don't know if you've been reading The Batman Who Laughs, but Alfred is actually doing open heart surgery in that book.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the master of all trades. He's a doctor.
He really is.
You know, he's even impersonated Batman before.
Well, and that's so far from where he originally comes from. He was Alfred Beagle, this fat, jolly guy who stumbles his way into the Batcave back in, 1943, I think it was Batman 16, where he's basically based off this actor named Arthur Treacher. Who was probably more famous for the Arthur Treacher Fish and Chip Shop in the Northeast than he is as an actor. But he's with Shirley Temple. He's this, you know, and so they picture this like fat, jolly butler guy who loves mystery novels and wants to be Sherlock Holmes. And he's a bumbler and he winds up being Batman's butler. And then there's the other, you know, the next stage where you have that Alfred Pennyworth, where he becomes more of a ally, and turns out he fought in the French resistance against the Nazis, and his daughter had some sort of weird backstory involving partisans and Nazi spies. And then the final stage where he becomes Bruce's father. I mean, at no point until modern times was he really the father figure. And we can date that back to, once again, Frank Miller, Dark Knight Returns. Before that, mm-hmm. Alfred is an ally. He's more of a peer. After Dark Knight Returns, he becomes more of the sarcastic father figure, further reinforced in Year One and further reinforced in the next decades to follow. And he becomes the father of Bruce, as opposed to the ally of Bruce in the Silver Age and Bronze Age and the comedy relief character in the Golden Age. That much I love the character.
Absolutely. He's such a great character. And, and there was a time where Alfred left, you know? And Batman wasn't the same. I'm thinking it was Bruce Wayne murder or something, somewhere around there.
Well, okay, there were two times. One time was when Alfred was dead. I mean, dead. He was so dead, you couldn't get any deader. And as mostly Aunt Harriet mm-hmm. was the main focus in the Batman comics. Now, eventually, Alfred comes back as a supervillain called the Outsider. The Outsider is this mysterious villain who's in there for like about 7 or 8 comics. And then eventually it's revealed that it's the revived body of Alfred. And they cure the Outsider, bring him back to Alfred. And we never talk about Alfred being dead for, I think it's like 2 or 3 years. He was dead. Like they had written him out of comics. And then, of course, later on, right, during the Batman, whenever Bruce Wayne's accused of murder or whatever, and Bruce and Alfred have a fight, and he's not in the comics anymore. I don't recall a lot of those details, but yeah, you're right there. So, I mean, there's been a couple of times when Alfred hasn't been part of it, and it hasn't felt right whenever that happened.
No, I agree totally. So, Bob, what is your number one ally of Batman?
Once again, my number one was going to be what you took, which was simply Alfred. Whether he's Alfred Pennyworth, whether he's Alfred Beagle, whether he's whatever other name you give him, whether he's a former SAS agent, whether he's a former OSS agent, whether he's a former goofy fat actor, you need someone to be the exposition. You can't always rely upon Robin to provide exposition for your story. So you need to have that character who is there so that Batman can explain what's going on to an outsider. Alfred is there. Also, the idea of Alfred as father. As I said, it's a modern convention. And, you know, it's hard to think about that might be modern, but it is. And there's something really touching about that. The person who was employed by another man, who was so faithful to another human being that he watches over his son. I don't know. There's something kind of powerful about that. So I love Alfred in whatever iteration, whether it's, bad with the machine gun or whether it's the sarcastic jerk carrying the tray of wine or whether it's the bumbling detective, whoever it is. I love that Alfred. Alfred would always be my number one.
Okay. I have to ask this question.
Yes.
Alfred from Batman Forever, Batman and Robin. How about that Alfred?
Oh, man.
You know what? He is the same Alfred from, you know, pretty much every movie. Every movie, Alfred is sarcastic, sardonic, realizes that a man dressing as a bat is absurd and treats it as such and is delightful. Even if he's reminding Batman to bring his bat card and his Batmobile when he goes through a drive-thru. Whatever. Whatever. That's I love that Alfred.
Very cool. Joey, what's your number one?
So what's funny is I was going to pick Alfred as my number one as well. I love the ex-SAS operative Alfred because he's a tough dude. And that's who I think would be backing up Batman, right? He, a guy who is just as much, trained as Batman is. Some would probably even argue even better, you know, but I love that version of him. And Bob, this one's for you. I just love what they're doing in Gotham with him.
Ka-ching! Another $10 for Joey.
Well, yeah. He's an awesome character. I've always said, you can't have Batman, you can't have Bruce Wayne without Alfred.
Well, in fairness, you did have Batman without Alfred for a very long period of time. You definitely had Batman before Alfred was a father figure for even longer time. And, you know, I'm just saying that Alfred becoming cool in the 70s. Batman did okay before the 70s. I'm just saying, he might have been out there. Somebody might have known his name. God, Joey, I didn't mean to step over your point. You're right. You can't have Batman without Alfred.
Come on.
What am I saying? Gosh. Madness.
Very good. So, my number one, and I went outside the box here a little bit for my number one.
Oh, tell me it's Batman Jones.
No, but that would be awesome. That would be awesome. It's not Batman Jones. Oh. Yeah, it's actually Batmite. Batmite is the best.
Sure.
I'm kidding. My number one is Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, no. Womp womp.
Bob got really excited there.
I got really excited. I was going to talk all about the fifth dimension, but now that you ruined it.
We thought Bill's going to be throwing in that wild card.
Now it's going to be real that I'm a fifth dimensional imp, and now I'm going to turn Bill into a toad. Ah, that's awful.
So Commissioner Gordon, my number one ally.
I said, no, no, with any Batman character, you have the what era Commissioner Gordon is the one that is first in your mind. You close your eyes, you think of Commissioner Gordon, you think of him naked, and you stop thinking of him naked, and you just think of him as a character. What is the character that you're thinking of when you think Commissioner Gordon?
It's like the 80s and 90s Commissioner Gordon.
Okay, that for me. Awesome in, stash. In
a, yes. Yes, and the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. When he was dating, I guess he was dating Sarah Essen, you know, right out of Batman Year One.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Joey, who is your Commissioner Gordon? When you close your eyes, who's the artist who's doing your Commissioner Gordon?
I think it would probably be Killing Joke. No. when he's in that fun house, chained up. No, just kidding. Okay.
I too think of Commissioner Gordon naked and in bondage a lot. So yeah, no, I get that. There's no judgment here, Joey.
I don't know if it's necessarily a book, but it's always just, I always picture, you know, Jim Gordon's always standing next to that light, waiting for Batman to come in, and it's just that's just who he is. That's what he's doing. That's what I always envision. That's when I close my eyes, always see Gordon standing next to that light.
Yeah, I think of the Jim Arpro Gordon of the 70s and 80s, and also the Batman animated series Gordon.
Okay,
that is such an iconic Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, I do want to say I do like the, you know, the if we're going to talk about animated versions, I do like the Year One animated version.
Yeah, well, Year One was simply a great story. You know, I mean, that's all of a sudden it's one of the few times you see Gordon humanized. Yeah, that's cool. And weak and flawed, because normally he's not flawed. He's not as smart as Batman, but he's not a flawed human being. Seem actually flawed. Having an affair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some good stuff.
Yeah, it was very interesting. No, but when I think of Jim Gordon, he's the strong, and I don't know if they're quite friends, but they are close. You know, he trusts Batman. Batman trusts Jim Gordon, and I tell you, The one issue that really got to me here recently is when Batman struck Jim Gordon. You know, in the Batman issue, it was like a gut punch because those two were like, you know.
Since we're on the subject of Gordon, I got to ask you two guys here. Do you guys think that Gordon knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman? Like, he's got to know, right? If Jim Gordon is this amazing detective that even the greatest detective would go to for, you know, insight and advice, yeah, he's got to know, right?
Well, I think I've mentioned it before, and I think he knows, but he'll never let on that he knows.
Right.
And he doesn't want Batman to know that he knows, but he's got to know.
I like the idea. I love the idea of Jim Gordon. He knew about, you know, Barbara Gordon, his daughter being Batgirl. He's known about Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yeah.
I love the idea that he's known that since the early days, and he just plays along with it. Because then any iteration of Gordon that you read or watch on TV, you could say, oh, yeah, that's kind of neat thinking about, you know, think about the 66 Gordon, you know, Batman 66, knowing yeah. that Adam West, Batman, is Bruce Wayne. Knowing him makes him seem that much smarter. And so all of a sudden he's like, I don't know, Batman. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. All of a sudden it's just better knowing that he knows Batman is Bruce Wayne. And it's not backed up by any text. It's not obviously backed up by writer's intent. But I love watching anything from Detective Comics 1920, from Detective Comics 27 onward. Yeah. He knows Bruce Wayne is Batman. That's why he talks to Bruce. Mm-hmm. I love that idea, and I hope they keep it a mystery. I hope they keep it hinted at, and never ruin that. That's a great little dynamic.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea as well. You know, that he knows, but he would never come straight out and say it. He's always just going to play along with that he doesn't know, that it's just this mystery. I think that's the perfect way. Like you said on the last episode about, you know, the Joker, if he had the toxin inside of his heart, it kind of would ruin the dynamic between Joker and Batman. I think this would ruin the dynamic between Batman and Jim Gordon as well if he came out and said that he knew.
I agree. It's a great, and once again, if you read it as subtext, every single issue of Batman becomes much more interesting when you read their interaction. If you picture it, Gordon knows. So for the very first appearance of Batman, why is he explaining a crime scene to this rich dilettante Bruce Wayne? What if he knew?
Yeah, absolutely.
What if he knew? It makes it so much better.
So very good. Very good. Some good picks there. Too bad I didn't go with... Well, my special mention is going to be Batmite. There you go.
I think special mention. Can I give my special mention? And readers of the Batpod will know, but Batman Jones. Now, if you don't know, Batman Jones, this kid who his parents were saved by Batman, and so he is named Batman Jones. And he grows up loving Batman. And when he's a kid, he wants to be a detective. And he finally meets Batman, and turns out he's actually better being Batman, as a little kid Batman, than any Robin has ever been. He's smarter than Dick Grayson. He's able to figure out more clues than Batman. And he would be dressed in a little kid in a Batman suit, as good as the Dark Knight, if not for the fact that he decides he wants to become a stamp collector. I'm thinking it's a missed opportunity. Now, it's not like the Eraser, but oh my God, why hasn't Batman Jones come back? He has a little bike. He's wearing a little Batman outfit. It's
there you go.
Great.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks again for joining us for this topic. Bob, we really appreciate it.
Well, you know, being on here on a very special evening where Joey is not entirely wrong.
Yeah.
It makes me feel special to be present when Joey is not entirely 100% wrong in everything he does. To be present when Joey is not a failure. To be present when Joey's soul is not a dark, miserable place, but instead, great, this is the new Joey. This is Joy Reborn. This is the new 52 Joey, and my gosh, I'm honored to be here to see it.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah, I'm not impressed, you know? I'm just not impressed. Seriously. Joey, just hand Bob your Batman card. Come on.
Nope.
No, new 52 Joey, the winner Joey. He's my new hero. He's my new favorite Batman ally. And Bill, I don't want to hear anything against new 52 Joey.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, guys. Love the two of you. Love the Bat Pod. And, you know, keep on batting. Or God, I need closing. I need something to say goodbye to. Whatever. Hey, good night, y'all.
What a great topic. We really appreciate Bob coming on, and we will head back to the books.
This week, we're going to be talking about Batman Who Laughs number 2, The Laughing House Part 2. We got Scott Snyder as the writer, Jock as the artist, David Barron on colors, Sal Cipriano on the letters, Jock has a cover, Ben Oliver has a variant, Dave Wagle's assistant editor, Katie Kuber editor, Jamie S. Rich group editor, and Batman was created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. We start this issue with a scene where we see Batman with all kinds of different vials stuck into his body full of antitoxin serum. We also see Alfred doing some open heart surgery on the Joker. Batman goes back to being in disguise as Harvey Bullock. We see the effects of the Joker toxin, where Batman kind of goes off a little bit on one of the patrolmen. We see Batman and the Batman Who Laughs go at it head for head. But the Grim Knight shoots Batman with a taser bullet, takes him down for a moment, and then at the very end, we see Gordon calling upon somebody you would have never thought, James Gordon Jr. What did you think about this one, Bill?
I think it was very interesting. I mean, right off the bat, my first question is, what can't Alfred do? I mean, he's performing open heart surgery here.
Oh, man. He is the jack of all trades, right?
Absolutely. So the Joker died. The toxin in his heart was released and infected Batman, but then he's brought back. Does that mean that the Joker toxin is like gone out of his heart? Or if he dies again, it does the same thing?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if there's science behind this.
I mean, you got to think about it. If he's doing open heart surgery, that you would need some kind of form of heart transplant. Which means he would have a new heart, so the toxin would be gone, right? That's a big question mark in my head.
Yeah, you really can't think too much about the science behind this, because it doesn't work at all. Right. Just don't think too much about it. Just say, oh, okay, and keep going. Because if you think too much about, hey, how is this even possible? Because if he dies, where is this toxin coming from? Was it leaking out of his ears or... You know what I'm saying?
How do they, and if that's the case, how do they dispose of that heart?
Yeah, I have no idea.
One of my favorite visuals here in this whole book is one of the very first pages here. You see Batman with all these needles stuck in him all over the place, and he's still trying to fight off this toxin. None of these vials of antitoxin is helping or working, and it works just ever so slowly.
And they're jammed in everywhere.
Right. Even in his calves, man.
Man, that has to hurt.
Right. And those are some big needles. I did love seeing him dress up as Harvey Bullock. And the only person that knows is obviously Jim Gordon. He's like, you know, I'm playing along here a little bit, but everybody knows that Harvey's on leave here. So just.
Right. He must be a good lookalike. I don't know. He is a master of disguise.
He's, you know, I bet you Alfred does his prosthetics work as well.
Yeah.
But you could see the toxin here kind of, you know, getting to him a little bit. He goes off into a little bit of a rage against one of the patrolmen there, you know, because the patrolman believes that he's Harvey. So he kind of is like, he's like, hey, what were you saying about Batman? We had this poll going on kind of a thing. And what were you saying the other day? And Batman kind of just goes off on him. And I loved seeing that. And he's like, well, you know, chill out. Calm down a little bit.
Yeah, so I guess his disguise is good enough that some of his fellow officers don't know that it's not him.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I always love seeing maps of Gotham in different books. Uh-huh. It's interesting to see. I always think about, where would Gotham be in the United States?
Yeah.
Where exactly? Yeah. And it's like, you know, you've heard New Jersey, you heard Delaware, New York. It'd be interesting if DC ever put out a map to show where some of these fictional cities actually were. I mean, in Batman versus Superman, Metropolis and Gotham were like, you could see each city.
Yeah. It was like kind of like Oakland and San Francisco.
Yeah. I don't think they should be that close.
Uh huh.
I think they should be definitely a farther distance away.
I loved that the reason why we're seeing this map here is because they're talking about this contingency plan here. They're talking about this last laugh or whatever they're calling it, where you kind of cut off the city from the rest of the world and kind of quarantine the city. And Batman says that he's been working on his own last laugh for years. So you get this idea that he's going to cut off the city, like kind of keep these guys within, you know, Gotham. So I loved seeing this.
And another question that we didn't ask last episode or anything. How does the Batman who laughs see?
Dude, I've always had that question.
He has his eyes covered.
How the heck does he see?
Yeah, it is an odd design.
And my thing is, why is he still wearing a cape when he's got this kind of this jacket, this weird looking thing on?
Well, he's Batman, so. Dude, does he open a can of you know what on these security guards?
Oh, man. You got limbs flying all over the place.
Man.
Batarangs
in the face.
Oh, man. Yeah. This is a gruesome, gruesome sight. And then you see Grim Knight here. He shoots his bullets. And the Batman who laughs says, even Grim Knight's bullets have bullets. So this thing, he says,
don't try to get up. The bullet lodged in your intercostal has a bat taser in it. The Grim Knight even has bullets. Even has his bullets shoot bullets.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Which is, how does that work? You know, his bullet has a taser in it.
Yeah. Again, another thing you just don't question, you just go with it.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Batman who laughs, how does he see? You just go with it.
Right. It's a wild and crazy story, and you just try to have fun with it, you know?
Yeah.
If you try to pick it apart, you know, it's not going to make much sense, but it's very enjoyable. The dialogue is great. The art is fantastic. I can't say enough about Jock's art. He should be on a regular Batman book, seriously.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But what did you think about that ending?
Well, first we have, you know, the Joker is sitting up. I don't know if Batman's holding him up.
Well, I think he made Alfred wake him up. I think he gave him some kind of adrenaline to kind of get him awake a little bit.
Yeah. So you wouldn't think that quickly after open heart surgery. As I said, don't put a lot of thought in the science behind all this because it's not going to make sense.
Right.
But no, it's you have the end scene. Do you want to tell everybody about the end scene?
So, yeah, we see Jim Gordon walking into looks like a little supermarket there. And he goes in and he's looking to see if he can grab some help from somebody. And that person is none other than his son, James Gordon Jr. And where do we know James Gordon Jr. from, Bill?
Well, it says next, the Black Mirrors. You know him from Scott Snyder's first Batman story, The Black Mirror, crossover in Detective Comics.
I thought that was really cool. If this book wasn't cool before, you just because of this last page, it was so good.
And, you know, it has to be pretty serious for Jim Gordon to come to his son, who's a serial killer.
Yeah.
And say, you're the only one that can help us stop him.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting.
And the other thing, I don't know if you noticed, is his fake eye.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah. Well, actually, James Gordon Jr. is going to be our spotlight character for this week. So we'll go over why he has a fake eye.
Cool.
Very entertaining issue.
Yeah, it was a really, really good issue.
So was there anything else you wanted to add about this book?
No, I think that was it.
The one thing that I do want to add is the cover. Sometimes we don't always mention the cover, which we should. It's a pretty awesome cover. I like this Grim Knight look, you know, with all these guns. I don't know how he's running around with like 16 guns on his back.
Right.
But yeah, Jock, pretty cool. Very good.
Yeah, he's a great artist.
So now we're going to head to Stump the Co-Host.
Welcome to the Batpod Stump Your Co-Host segment. Listen while Bill tries to stump his co-host. Can he do it? Let's wait and find out.
Welcome to Stump the Co-Host, and today we have a good topic. Love this topic. We got Joey here who's about to be stumped.
All right.
Your Batman card is slowly... I think I'm just going to take that Batman card if you do not win tonight.
All right.
Seriously.
Are you sure?
You need to get some of these right.
Are you sure you haven't pulled it already?
No, I haven't pulled it already. Tonight's the night.
All right.
So tonight the topic is love. Since we're close to Valentine's Day, you know, love interests of Bruce Wayne or people Bruce Wayne has dated.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Bruce Wayne's love?
Kind of.
Okay. Okay. So he thinks he's going to ace this one. Okay. Your first question, and all these are Bruce Wayne's love interests or people Bruce Wayne has dated.
Okay.
Except for one. You have to tell me which one doesn't belong. A, Vicky Vale. B, Silver St. Cloud. C, Julie Madison.
Okay.
D, Rachel Reynolds.
Ooh.
Or E, Jezebel Jett.
Ooh.
Which one of those love interests or people that Bruce Wayne has dated does not belong?
Oh my goodness. Okay. I would have said the last two, but then you brought a third one. So there's like, what, five altogether now? Oh man. Goodness, I thought you were going to stop at four.
We got five tonight.
Thought you were making this easy on me tonight. Oh man. Okay. I know Vicky Vale was one. I can't remember if that was just because it was in the movies. I know. I think Silver was one. Can't remember. I'm going to go for a shot in the dark here on this one. I'm going to go between D and E. First instinct, D.
D?
Yes.
Rachel Reynolds. You think that's the fake one?
Shot in the dark, yes.
You are correct.
Oh, yes. Woo.
Vicky Vale's first appearance was Batman number 49, 1948. Silver St. Cloud, Detective Comics 470, 1978. Julie Madison, Detective number 31, 1939. And Jezebel Jett, Batman 656 from 2006. So you were guessing there. Am I correct?
Yes, yes, I was guessing there. That was a...
guessing that. You should have known those. Come on.
I knew that one sounded... That was the one that sounded really... The last two sounded really funny to me. So I was like, I had to go through those ones.
Okay. So our next question is tied into the first question.
Uh-huh.
Jezebel Jett, one of Bruce's former girlfriends. How does she die? And I have four scenarios. One is the actual way she died, and the other three are fake. So the question again is, how does Jezebel Jett die? A, killed by strangulation by the Joker during No Man's Land. B, her airplane crashes due to a League of Assassins death squad enhanced with Man-Bat serum. C, after being dosed with Scarecrow's fear toxin, commit suicide. Or D, after discovering Bruce Wayne's secret life as Batman, flees and dies in a fiery car crash.
Oh, man. Those are some good ones. All right. This one's kind of a difficult one, Bill. I don't really know. Do I have a lifeline on this one?
Sure, you have a lifeline.
Okay.
Why not?
All right, what are my lifelines?
Well, you can do it. Let's do 50-50 or phone a friend.
Okay. 50-50 wouldn't work here because there's more than one question. Let's do phone a friend.
Okay.
And I've got the perfect person in mind here. Let's see.
Oh, really?
Let's see if we can pull up. All right. Bill, I'm gonna go ahead and call Bob from A Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop. I think he might be able to help me with this one. Let's see if we can get him on the line. Hey, Bob, are you there?
Yes, I saw the red phone starting to flash. I pushed up the bust of Shakespeare, and I've gone down to the cave. I'm here. Is this Joey and Bill?
Yes, yes. So this is our Stump the Co-host segment, and Bill has asked me a couple of questions, and I had a little trouble on this next one here, and he's going to ask it again and see if you can help me out with this. Are you up for that?
Now, I do find it slightly offensive, the idea of asking people quizzes on a podcast. I'm shocked by that notion. I think it's a terrible idea.
Well, yeah, it's a terrible idea because Joey never gets any right. That's why it's a terrible idea.
That's why I need your help.
Partly, Bill, I just want to put it out there that if you're doing the obscure, hey, did this happen to Batman 156 or Batman 157, and was it the lower left-hand side of the page or the lower right-hand side of the page, you know, maybe there's a reason that maybe the answers aren't forthcoming. I'm just saying, I'm not going to criticize you as a quizmaster. But maybe.
Okay, we have a good one tonight, and it's not a number, so I'll ask the question again so Bob can hear it. And our first question actually was that Joey actually got right.
Oh, wait. Did you say Joey got one right?
Yes.
Yes. By guessing, but he got one right. But
it's like the Bizarro World.
Tell me about it.
Joey, I'm so sad. Joy, I'm got one right. Yes, Bizarro Joey. Congratulations.
So, the subject for tonight was love interests of Bruce Wayne. So, my first question I asked him, I gave him a bunch of different names from love interests or people that Bruce Wayne has dated, and he picked the one that did not belong.
Good for Joey.
The second question was, how did Jezebel Jett die?
Oh, my God, from the brilliant Batman R.I.P.
R.I.P. And Joey was having a little trouble with this one, so I'll give you the scenarios. Only one is correct. So I got A, killed by strangulation by the Joker during No Man's Land. B, her airplane crashes by the League of Assassins death squad enhanced with Man-Bat serum. C, after being dosed with Scarecrow's fear toxin, commits suicide. Or D, after discovering Bruce's secret life as Batman, flees and dies in a fiery car crash.
Now, Jezebel Jett was one of the greatest characters that I think has come out of Batman in the past 5 years. Although, actually, isn't Batman R.I.P. longer than that? Anyways, yeah, she was a great love interest foil. Turns out she was working for the bad guys the whole time. She penetrated Bruce's personal life. I kind of remember Talia al Ghul having her severed head. So I would say Man-Bats, right?
Okay.
Man-Bats.
All right.
You want to go with that, Joey?
You know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and trust Bob on this one. He sounds like he knows a little bit about this issue. I think I'm going to go with that one. I'm going to go with his answer there, final answer.
I'm on pins and needles.
And you would be correct.
Yes. Thanks, Bob.
Joey, two right answers.
Yeah. I won one. It's been a while.
Died. Her plane went down after Talia al Ghul sent the League of Assassins enhanced with Man-Bat serum, and she went down on the plane. And that was actually, it's been a while. Her first appearance was actually in 2006, so it has been a little while.
Has it really been that long?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, all I say is that maybe all die in man-bat-related homicides.
There you go. All right, Bob, I appreciate you coming on, man, and helping me out with that. That was awesome.
Anytime, Joey, and I'm going to need some tips on grooming my beard. So I think you're going to be the man who's going to help me in return.
Well, the key to having a beautiful, well-groomed beard is essential oils.
So, Joey, would you like to find out what you won?
Yes, I would.
You're going to have to share it with me.
Okay. Well, you won a free invitation to the Gotham City very own Laugh Out Loud Comedy Club. You're a comedian, right? You think you're pretty funny. You know, you come on the Bat Pod with your little jokes and you think you're a comedian. You get a free tryout. What do you think?
Yeah.
But only one problem. There's a catch. There's a catch.
Okay.
You have to be funny because the Joker is taking over this comedy club. And if you don't get him to laugh, well, it's the end for you, buddy. So you better be funny.
You know, Joey, I think your bit about airline food is just going to kill it. Or you're going to be killed. One of the two.
Right, one of the two. That's funny. That's a good one. All right, guys. Appreciate you coming on and helping me out with that, Vaughn.
Absolutely. All right, you guys have a great night.
All right, we'll see you later.
Thanks a lot. So you got to keep your Batman card for another week. You got two correct.
Yes.
It's a miracle. I don't believe it. Nobody out there believes it. It's truly a miracle. So
yeah. I'm glad that I just got that first one right all on my own.
Yeah, all that studying you did, correct?
Right, all that guessing works out.
Detective Comics 997. Story and words by Peter J. Tomasi. Penciler Doug Monkey. Inkers Christian Almy and Mark Irwin. Colorist David Barron. Letterer Rob Lay. Cover Doug Monkey and Jamie Mendoza and Mark Barron. Variant cover Brian Stelfreeze. Associate editor Dave Wagos. Editor Chris Conroy. Group editor Jamie S. Rich. When we open this book, we find Batman in a death trap with his good buddy, ex-trainer, Thaddeus. And they're in an underwater death trap with sharks, piranha, and such. After escaping and fighting it out with the mutated monster that looks like Batman, Bruce heads to the only person that could be behind all of this, Hugo Strange.
Yeah. Man, we kind of talked about that last episode, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, if you think mutated monster men sort of thing,
yeah.
You think, hey, he's got to be behind it.
Right, right.
But I tell you what, this death trap, the way this sets up, and really, I dropped the ball last episode when I said, I looked up this character Thaddeus. I have no idea who he was, if he was a trainer or not. But he actually comes directly from the comics. He was the original Mr. Miracle, and he actually trained Mr. Miracle. And as of this issue, a Batman says that he trained him also.
Okay.
You know, an escape artist. Yeah, yeah. So you see escape artists at work right off the bat.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, he's a, what is he? He was in the circus as an escape artist, so that's what he does. That was kind of cool, because they are here in a death trap, and they are tied. And I love reading this one, because they were talking about, you know, all the different scenarios. The water kind of engulfs them, and they are tied up with leather straps. And I love how Batman says, you know, leather straps, they get tighter when they're wet. They bind a whole lot harder. It's harder to get out of. So you have to get a little creative to get out of these things. So what do? They use their surroundings. And I love that.
You know, I always talk about, you know, things that happen between the panels. You see this escape, you see all of it. You see every aspect of the way he escapes.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest things in the book that I've never seen in a Batman book, is him use his ears, his Batman ears.
Yeah, did you see that?
As like a projectile.
I saw that. I said, wait a minute. I had to flip back and I said, did he just use his ear? Did one just fly off?
He shoots it right off his head into a shark's eye, you know?
That was awesome. But you got to think, Batman would do that. Batman would think about everything, right? He's like, what? If I'm tied up, my ears got to come off somehow.
And the coolest thing is he retrieves it later and replaces it.
Does he? I didn't see that.
Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, he had it in his hand and he was stabbing later on. And then all of a sudden when he's up, they're up out of the water. Yeah. It's back on his head.
I did not notice that. That's hilarious. Hey, man, he's like, he's a frugal guy. He's not going to waste that.
But this mystery keeps getting deeper and deeper, crazier and crazier.
Yeah, yeah. I love this issue. It was so good. The colors, the dialogue, even sometimes there was a little bit too much words, but I can get through that a little bit. I think there was one moment where I was reading this book and I was like, I've been on this page for quite some time now and I'm like halfway through reading it.
Yeah, this was pretty awesome. Two normal human beings definitely wouldn't survive. And the mutated monster, you know, looks like Batman and has taken his utility belt.
Yeah, I love that. That was pretty cool.
He looks like an evil Batman and they sort of have a fight. I'm still have no idea. I mean, he's mutating into his parents and...
The way this thing mutates is just so creepy to me. This is... Like, parts of it itself, like, comes out of its, like, body, of its own body, and takes the form of different people's. And even one point, I had to ask myself, and I might even be asking you here right now, did this thing kind of mutate into all these different characters, and were they, like, miniaturized?
It looks like that, almost, you know?
Yeah.
It looked like, you know, maybe a piece, he took a piece off of them and made these characters. There's almost instantaneously. I mean, you have Batwoman, Robin, Nightwing, Commissioner Gordon.
Alfred. Yeah, his parents. It was pretty interesting. And it looks like they're just like on his chest and on his neck. And they're like miniaturized, like almost like action figures, like 10-inch action figures.
Yeah, crazy.
You see him using his batarang on those characters and just slices all their heads off. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, and he eventually sends the creature down into the death trap they just escaped, and the piranha looks like they took care of him, but
yeah,
I kind of doubt it.
Right. I gotta tell you, when this mutated character showed up for the first time in this issue, looking like Batman, I had to stop and look at that page for a little bit because that was a really cool looking Batman right there.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Another couple panels that I liked here was when that Batman, the mutated Batman, was falling into that death trap. You know, you see his claws grasping at the ground there, and it just kind of scrapes back as it falls slowly into the pit. Oh, that was such a cool panel.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. You know, Batman's ready to leave, and he's saying to Thaddeus, "Need a lift?" And he goes, "With my Rifleman and Twilight Zone collections gone, along with my roof, I'm guessing that I do."
That's hilarious. I love that he's a collector.
Yeah. But then Batman's like, he says, "I'll follow you wherever you end up." And he says, "Sorry, maybe next time." So is he giving him a ride or leaving him there?
He asks him for a ride, but then he's like, "No, this is a solo mission."
And when he finds Hugo Strange, Hugo Strange has his bat costume on.
And he's got the utility belt. Did you notice that?
Yeah. He's impersonated him before, so it's not a surprise to see him in a costume.
Right. But this makes me feel like Hugo Strange is the mutated character. Did you get that feel?
No, I didn't get that feel. But, it's so little. It's like one big page, basically two pages that fit together. But we don't get a sense of what is going on, just that his lab's been destroyed. And then Batman comes in. But I don't think Batman destroyed his lab. Did you get the feeling that Batman destroyed his lab?
You know what? I can't. There's a couple of different ways that I'm seeing this in my head. at first, when the way it's kind of playing out, I'm like, okay, so are they kind of giving us a little bit of a backstory showing us what happened with Hugo Strange and how he became this mutated character? Or are we seeing something that's in a little bit further into the future where Batman broke into his lab and tore apart his lab and blew it up? So I was kind of thinking it could go either of those ways for me, at least.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And these, I've been reading these right away because the Detective Comics here with Peter Tomasi and Duncan Bonnke has been really good and really entertaining. It's been wild stuff happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really have no idea. We're leading right up to 1,000. I have no idea where it's going. But how did you like that cover? I thought that cover was very cool, you know?
Oh, yeah, that was
cool.
It
has Batman all chained up, and all these chains are going in different directions. And he's wearing the Mr. Miracle mask over top of his cowl.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. Really clever.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat.
You know, the artwork in this issue is so good. Like, them in that death trap with all these sharks going around and how Batman tears off a piece of the shark and just kind of drops it at his feet so that the piranhas can eat at the leather straps. Oh, such a cool image there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the artwork is fantastic. I do like this scene. You know, Batman and Thaddeus are facing each other and the water slowly rising.
Yeah.
And Thaddeus says, I have to go to the bathroom. And Batman's like, well, I suggest you hold it.
Hey, do you think he held it or not? Because there was a moment there. He's like, hey, my bladder, I'm old, man. I can't hold things like that anymore.
Well, no, very cool. Very good issue. I really enjoyed this one. This one was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a pretty good one, you know, other than leaving this last impression of Batman just got peed on by his former.
Right. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to add about this issue?
No, I just want to say, you know, this artwork was amazing. I love this story and I've got so many more questions, but I think the direction that they're going is kind of getting me back on track here, so I love this issue here for that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So yeah, we'll head to our next segment, and that would be Character Spotlight.
Welcome to Character Spotlight, and on this edition of Character Spotlight, our character is none other than James Gordon Jr. And James Gordon Jr. was created by Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli. The character first appeared in Batman 407 in May 1987, and he's, of course, the son of Commissioner Jim Gordon. James Gordon Jr. first appears in the Bat 1 Year 1 story arc. Barbara Eileen and James Gordon conceive James Jr. shortly before arriving to Gotham City. Gordon quickly attracts the attention of mobster Carmine Falcone, who sends hitman Johnny Vitti to kidnap his infant son. Vitti actually throws James Jr. off a bridge, but Batman saves him. That's in Batman 404 to 407. We next see James Gordon Jr. as an adult in Detective Comics 871 through 881 in the Scott Snyder Black Mirror. It establishes that James Gordon Jr. is a psychopath who has displayed violent behavior from an early age. As a child, he kills animals and dissects them as a hobby. He is accused in the disappearance of one of his sister's friends, Bess Keller. Barbara says that she saw him carrying Bess's keychain, although this is never proven. His antisocial behavior contributes to his parents' divorce, and he eventually leaves Gotham to travel around the country. When he returns to Gotham years later, he begins secretly following his father, James Jr. confronts his father in a diner, and if you remember that scene, it's very creepy because he shows up. Barbara and Jim are having dinner, and he shows up when Barbara excuses herself to go to the bathroom or something, and Jim sees like ketchup on his shirt and is like, what's that? And he said, oh, I killed the waitress, I stuffed her in the toilet. And then you slowly see the water running out from the bathroom on the floor. And then when he leaves, Jim Gordon runs in there and somebody had stuffed toilet paper in the, but it makes you think as he's telling the story, did he really kill the waitress? So
that's so creepy. We were talking about it before. We were talking about this spotlight and we were looking at it, and that is the, even the coloring on those pages there even kind of gives it this eerie feel. So I thought that was really, really interesting.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really awesome story arc. But when they're in the diner, he actually explains to his father that he's taking medication to curb his violent impulses and trying to turn his life around. And he says he wants to get a job at Leslie Tompkins Clinic, and he asks his father for help.
He says that he's taking this stuff to curb his, psychopathic tendencies, but he's going to joke about killing somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little off.
I think that's a little bit of a red flag there.
Yeah. So while hunting down old cases, Commissioner Gordon meets another murderer who might have been responsible for the death of Bess Keller and begins to believe his son may indeed changed. In reality, however, James Jr. has definitely become a serial killer. They discover that James Jr. has reversed the formula of his medication to increase the homicidal impulses.
Wow.
That's insane.
Right.
You're already crazy and
you reverse it. That's so crazy.
Yeah. And they correctly deduce he's going to poison an infant nutritional facility. Next, Jim Gordon's ex-wife is attacked with Joker venom when the Joker escapes from Arkham. It turns out that James Jr. was using this as a diversion to kidnap his sister. When Barbara Gordon gives him a heart time about being no different than every other criminal in Gotham, James Jr. stabs her in the femoral arteries. Batman attempts, and at this point, this is pre-New 52, so Barbara Gordon is actually Oracle, and she's still in her wheelchair. Batman actually attempts to find them, and when he catches up with James Jr., he tells Batman he knows his secret identity, claiming that the Gordons and the Waynes are so connected to Gotham it would be impossible for him not to know.
Wow.
And he tried to get Batman's attention by helping the supervillain known as the Dealer and breaking the Joker out of Arkham. Believing that empathy and compassion are signs of weakness, he seeks to destroy Batman. Quote, the weakest man in Gotham, and create a new generation of psychopaths by tainting the baby food line production.
Oh my gosh. Are you kidding me?
Though badly wounded, Barbara Gordon stabs him in the eye when James Jr. tries to run away. His father shoots him in both legs, saving his own son's life and stopping him from falling off a bridge.
Wow.
Now, when the
interesting.
Yeah, very. Now, when the New 52 starts, we have some changes, some retcons, because in pre-New 52, Barbara was the half-sister of James Gordon. In New 52, Barbara Gordon is now the biological sister of James Gordon Jr. So, a couple changes there. At the beginning of the New 52, during one of the Arkham Asylum riots, James Jr. escapes from prison and begins to stalk Batgirl. So it's already established early on that, yeah, he's been caught. Maybe he didn't get stabbed in the eye. Maybe that part. But I think Black Mirror happened, but not maybe the way that we originally read it.
Okay.
But we're just guessing here. You know, a lot of things changed when the New 52 started. So
yeah, they do that a lot, don't they?
Yeah. So James Gordon escapes during the prison riot at Arkham and begins to stalk Batgirl. He then tries to murder his own mother and Batgirl number 19, which forces Barbara to wound him by throwing a batarang in his eye.
So that
essentially happens again, and that's why we saw in this recent issue of Batman who laughs, he has a fake eye, which batarang will do it. But when she throws this batarang in his eye, they're on a bridge, and he gets thrown back into the bridge, and she says, I know I heard his spine crack. And then he falls in the river, and the body's never found. But then pretty soon, he's found to be alive and well, and he's recruited by Amanda Waller to join the Suicide Squad in Suicide Squad Volume 4, Number 20.
Of course. Of course she had to be there, right?
Yes. And during the Forever Evil crossover in Suicide Squad 24 to 26, he's involved with the Suicide Squad in that story arc. He actually shows up in Batman Eternal after Commissioner Gordon is arrested for unintentionally causing an accident in Gotham's underground railway, which you come to find out that it wasn't his fault at all. It was something that was planned. And Gordon
I love that story.
Jim Gordon was actually arrested, thrown into Blackgate. So he's visited in Blackgate by James Gordon Jr., who makes arrangements to leave his father's cell open and said, "You can walk away. Here, I'll open the door. You can walk away." And Gordon's like, "I'm going to face this head on. I'm not going to be a criminal. I believe in justice. I believe in Gotham."
Yeah. I love that story. That is one of my favorite stories. A lot of people out there don't believe that that's a really good, but I always like Batman Eternal.
Yeah. I enjoyed that one. That was a weekly one.
I think I've collected most of the floppies on that run.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So that's actually the last time we see James Gordon Jr. until the Batman Who Laughs, where he looks like he's working at a grocery store, working at, you know, a produce stand or something when he's recruited by his father, which why is he out and why does Jim Gordon know that where to find him? He's a killer.
How does he get a job there?
Right. Yeah.
There's no way. They got to run a background check on him, right?
Right. Something like that. So the character of James Gordon Jr. has appeared in other media. He appeared in the Dark Knight movie. He was played by Nathan Gamble. And, you know, at the end of the movie, you see him because Two-Face takes him hostage.
Oh, the little boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they come out and say his name there, do they?
They might not. They might not. I'm not 100% sure.
I think it's just insinuated. Yeah, that's cool.
And he's in the animated Batman Year One movie. You know, as we said before, he as an infant, he's kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the story. So yeah, so that's our spotlight, James Gordon Jr. And I didn't know that this was going to be our spotlight character until, you know, we read that story and he showed up in the end and said, "Hey, what a perfect character to talk about. He doesn't have a lot of history, but, you know, he's a pretty interesting villain." And you got to call him a villain, you know?
Yeah, you have. I mean, he's a very interesting one. That's pretty cool.
You have these connections to James Gordon.
Yeah.
You have the connection to Barbara Gordon, Batgirl.
And you got that contrast of good and evil kind of thing going on in the family.
Yeah.
To bring him in on this investigation with, you know, the Batman Who Laughs and kind of thing. You know, Joker's already thinking, you got to be this craziest psychopath to beat him. Do you have that feeling that Jim Gordon is thinking that same thing, too, that you got to bring in a psychopath to counteract another psychopath?
That's a good possibility. That makes perfect sense. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do
with that. Yeah, this limited series has definitely piqued my interest. It's pretty exciting.
Cool, so, man. That was a really interesting spotlight.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and close up shop here. Is there anything that any last final comments you want to make about any of the books or anything we did tonight?
If I were to pick out of all three of these, which one was my favorite pick of the week, I think I might throw you off on this one because my book, I picked Batman Who Laughs, but I think for the pick of the week, my favorite, I think it would have to be Detective.
Yes, Detective for me also.
I'd love to see Batman and Thaddeus coming together and doing what they know best, to be these escape artists and use their surroundings. And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, how cool was that to see?
Right, yeah. But still, the one thing that is a little weird about it is that creature.
Yeah, the creature. I'm really curious to see where that's going to go and what that is and how that was created.
Right.
A lot of fun in the Batman books right now. A lot of fun. If you'd like to be a part of the Batpod, we have an email. Our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Also, you can send us an audio clip of that email. We'll play it right on the show.
And if you guys would like to get a hold of us at our bat phone, yes, we have a bat phone. That phone number is 410-449-0650. Again, the bat phone number is 410-449-0650.
And we are on Twitter. It's at PodBat. I am at GothamKnight13.
And I'm at JoeyGalvez84.
So, okay, we'll go ahead and wrap it up here, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with 3 more books, Little Character Spotlight, a topic of the week, and Stump the Co-Host. And I mean it this time, Stump the Co-Host.
No more lifelines?
No. No lifelines.
I think you're just upset that I won one in quite a time.
Okay, you won one. So you're one. This is episode 9. So you're 1. I can't add, apparently. You're 1 and 8.
No, there was a couple times that I actually won a few
more. Are you
more.
Sure about that? I don't remember.
I'm very sure. Hey, we'll go back and we'll go back in the archives and check it out and see how many I won. It was pretty fun having Bob on, though. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, okay. So, as I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.